Namaste. Good evening. I wanted to thank you for such a beautiful talk last night, Eric. That was the what and why talk. And of course, the why was about cultivating freedom. And the what was really understanding that it's not what's happening, it's how you're holding it inside. So that inspired me. I thought I might do the when and where talk. And of course, that would be here and now. So we have an hour and 25 minutes for walking. What I'd like to share tonight is more of a how talk. Or maybe a how and what. Eric gave such a beautiful kind of a 50,000 foot view, and I'd like to talk a little bit more about the runway when we're working with the issues that arise. There's one story that sticks with me when I go on a retreat in the United States, and you know, the managers have done such an amazing job of making us feel safe and comfortable. And the story is from a senior teacher who, way back when, wanted to learn more about this meditation stuff. So he went to Burma or Thailand, somewhere in Southeast Asia. There was no meditation hall. There was not really much support at all. But what he was told, as they set him off to his kuti, to his little hut, they just said, keep your awareness in your body. See you in a week. That was it. That was the instruction. Keep your awareness in the body. That instruction can sound a little bit grim, kind of like whack-a-mole, you know, when it's not in the body, bring it back. So you've heard lots of different language that's really saying the same thing. You've heard different ones of us say, to rest your awareness in the body, to escort your attention back to the body, to open your attention to the senses in the body, or even to receive the moment through the senses in your body. If there's one thing that I would like you to remember from this talk, it's however you do it, whether keeping or directing or escorting, to come home to your senses again and again. To notice the distinction between the narrative, the story, and the direct experience of what's happening is in many ways the essence of this whole inquiry here. So I'd like to talk a little bit about how this core instruction cannot just help you feel more whole, but can really help you feel transformed, and can even lead to a real true sense of freedom and liberation. I tend to look at meditation through two lenses. There's the practice I do that helps me maintain my life, sort of the stress reduction element of meditation. I know if I practice enough every day, I'll have enough clarity. I'll have a sense that I can at least keep my nostrils above the waterline. This level of meditation helps us to be more productive, to be more clear, to be less reactive, more responsive, more creative. It's all a wonderful thing. There's another aspect of meditation which I think of as transformation meditation, which is what we're doing here. Time of intensive practice, to give yourself again and again, to move into more and more subtlety in your practice. It's a full-time job, bringing your attention to whatever arises that's between you and feeling free. So these core instructions are very simple, and of course, they're not easy. There's a great story that Pema Chodron tells of kind of going to learn meditation on her first retreat. And was kind of told to Now close your eyes, relax, and bring your attention to the breath and the body. When the mind wanders, bring it back. So she practiced for the, you know, for the morning and came back and said, okay, I think I'm ready for the next level. And the teacher smiled and said, okay, here it is. Close your eyes, relax your body, bring your attention to the breath and the body. When your mind wanders, bring it back. There's this great New Yorker cartoon of this old, wizened monk, you know, sitting next to a young monk, and the caption is, no, there is nothing else. This is it. And you may be thinking that. You've completed 2 days. You have 5 days remaining. And depending on your internal state, you might be thinking, fantastic, this is Club Med. All I have to do is just walk and sit and eat these simple meals. Or you might be thinking, oh my God, all there is to do is sit and walk and eat these really simple meals. So it might be nice just to take a moment. It'll take just 1 minute to just to check in and just sense the simplicity of these instructions. If you like, you can just close your eyes and just escort your attention into this realm of the senses. How much can you feel right now? Can you detect this distinction between the narrative, the story, the commentating, the judgment, the comparison, and the direct, immediate experience of what's happening? And if you like, you can open the eyes, or if you prefer, you can keep your eyes closed. We tend to think, primarily in the West, we tend to think that transformation comes from exploring our emotions and exploring our thoughts and exploring our beliefs. And of course, that's true. But you may find that working with them as they present themselves in the body provides a tremendous platform for transformation and liberation. The classic teaching from the Buddha: there is one thing, monks, that cultivated and regularly practiced leads to a deep sense of urgency, to the supreme peace, to mindfulness and clear comprehension, to the attainment of right vision and knowledge, to happiness here and now, to realizing deliverance by wisdom and the fruition of holiness. It is mindfulness of the body. That wonderful list that Eric listed last night, and that's listed here, that this is possible through cultivating this awareness of the body. So this practice is simple, and our minds love complexity. And so how do we go about training the mind to actually rest here in the body? Turning our attention inward to the experience of the body can be quite transformational. Last time, I believe you were here, Eric, you taught walking meditation. And Eric introduced it with just the wonderful grab line. He said, I'd like to share with you a technique that's guaranteed to calm your mind within 5 minutes. And I thought, wow, lay it on me. I want that. I need that. And what he taught was counting while walking, kind of progressively, one step, one, two, one, two, three, and counting up to 10, and then moving backwards, 10, 10, 9, 10, 9, 8. And if you haven't used this technique, it's tremendously powerful, particularly when your mind is scattered. So I've always been inspired by that practice because it is such a guarantee of calming and sort of tranquilizing the mind. So recently in the new Year of Living Mindfully program that just started, I taught this as part of a retreat. And people went out to practice and we shared a little bit about the power of it. And at our last meeting, one of the participants came with a video camera. She said, "I have to show you this." She said, my 7-year-old daughter has got some behavioral anger issues. So I taught this technique to her, and I videotaped it. And I just want you to see one section. And so it was so cute because here was this little 7-year-old girl, and she's doing the steps and counting. 8, 8, 9, 10, and then I heard her mother's voice say, "That's wonderful, honey. Now do it backwards." She went, 1, 1, 2. But the wonderful thing about that was, at the end, she said, "Mommy, it works. I can't find my anger." What a beautiful thing for the 7-year-old to learn. She couldn't find her anger. So the body is a powerful tool for shifting our state, using concentration in the body, in the felt sense, can dramatically shift the experience of the mind. While it sometimes work to bring ourselves back again and again to the actual experience of the here and now, it can sometimes lead to really profound shifts. So I'd like to lead another little reflection on the hand, actually on both hands. If you like, if you can just bring your hands out in front of you. And you might like to look at them from the front and from the back. Just noticing the texture, the quality, and there's a wonderful meditation that Thich Nhat Hanh often leads, which is to see your parents' hands in your hands. And you might just take a moment to reflect on your ancestors, on the grandparents that maybe you knew, those generations that came before you, maybe names that you don't know. And just sensing these generations of hands that were young, whose grip was strong, that became more feeble, and then passed from form. It's all there in your hands, and there's a kind of mindfulness in just observing and watching. And then if you like, you can close your eyes and just sense, if you can, the hands from the inside. You might move the fingers, flex, lengthen the fingers. Just feeling the energy in the hands, the energy that animates this body. And then bringing your hands down to your lap, you might just place one hand on top of the other and just kind of let your hand just slightly hover, one slightly hovering over the other. And then bringing that hand in contact, and you might actually kind of like just lightly force your upper hand down on the lower hand. And this is how sometimes we sense the body. Either we sort of hover outside the body or we kind of force our attention into it. And you might just explore now relaxing the hands. Letting your attention deeply rest. Is it possible to soften the hands even more? And just sense how intimately you can feel what's here. As you sense, you may notice that you can't do this better by trying harder. Instead, there's a kind of receptivity, a kind of attentive receiving. And if just for a moment you might imagine this feeling in the hands without any past, without any future, without any judging or trying to figure anything out, just to experience and receive what's here. The Buddha called this awareness of the body in the body, meaning that your attention has dropped into the actual physical experience rather than your views or your concepts of the body. If you like, you can remain with your eyes closed or you can open the eyes. Awareness of the body in the body. Some people call this the felt sense. As one teacher I know refers it to as the gap, as grounded, aware presence. Others call it the somatic experience. Others might call it embodied awareness, the direct, immediate experience of the here and now. As I work with people in this felt sensing, it's important to recognize how it manifests. Sometimes it's strong and unmistakable. It grabs our attention very, very quickly with a real immediacy. Sometimes the felt sense sort of flickers or just sort of blips. And you may have had that experience of just sort of feeling a kind of a wave of sadness or a wave of joy just sort of pass through the body. Oftentimes it's vague and it's unformed. There's just an awareness that there's something arising in this body-mind matrix. I was once working with someone on this sort of felt sensing as kind of the core practice, and he said, I just realized is changing the center of gravity from here down to here. Most of our time, of course, is up here. The one thing that we notice when we begin to practice is how this body is a storehouse of memories. Perhaps you've had a few memories come parading through in these last few days. The Buddha talked of how you are the inheritor of your karma. That who you are is the culmination of causes and conditions. And part of your inheritance is genetic, passed down through your lineage. Some of your inheritance has to do with memes, with the beliefs and the habit patterns that have been passed down that you just sort of absorb. And most people practice the religion in which they were raised. They tend to vote the way their parents did. We just absorb this as who we are. mentions a wonderful story of a young girl who was watching her mother put a pot roast in the oven. And her mother cut the ends off the pot roast before she put it in. And she said, "Now, why do you do that?" And she said, "Well, because that's how my mother did it." "Well, let's check that out." And they went to visit her mother, and they said, "Why do you cut the ends off the pot roast?" She said, "It's what my mother did." So the grandmother was actually alive, and they went to her, and they said, "So why do you cut the ends off the pot roast?" She said, "Well, because I only had a pan that was that big." But we absorb all of this. And all of those memories come to the surface in our practice. Some of those memories will be deeply unpleasant. They'll generate an unpleasant felt sense. And you'll find yourself moving away from them. Some of the memories will be incredibly pleasant. And they will generate a pleasant felt sense. And you'll find yourself wanting to hold on to them, wanting to cling to them. And some of the memories will be neutral. And they'll generate a feeling that will be neither pleasant nor unpleasant. And you may find yourself feeling restless or kind of bored or sleepy. For many years, I supervised juice fasting retreats. And there was a really powerful thing. And everything that we did was sort of detoxing. And I think in many ways, meditation retreats are also detox retreats. That everything that's between you and feeling free, everything undigested in your life, comes to the surface to be seen, to be met with awareness and with kindness. So the paying attention to what is arising and how you're holding it in the felt sense is key. Noticing the attitude in the mind, the play of aversion, of clinging. The Buddha said that if the body is not mastered by meditation, the mind cannot be mastered. If the body is mastered, the mind is mastered. So it's those very moments of how you respond to that felt sense in the body that directly correlate to how you experience them in the mind. In teaching meditation, there are lots of wonderful metaphors, such as training a puppy how to sit. You tell the puppy how to sit. You say, "Sit," has no idea what you're talking about. Push her little bottom to the ground, say, "Sit." She looks at you with so much love and goes racing off. In that same way, with practice and patience and compassion, the puppy will begin to sit for longer and longer periods of time. In that same way, we have to practice that same compassion for the mind, to escort the mind back again and again and again. So when these manifestations arise in the body, how do we work with them? How do we investigate these experiences in a way that can cultivate a greater sense of wholeness and aliveness? The first retreat I ever went on was a 10-day retreat, very orthodox, very, very strict. And we took vows at the beginning of the retreat, and one of the rules of this retreat was no food after noon. No food after noon completely freaked me out. I had images of myself dying of starvation during the retreat. As a result, I overate at every meal. And I, of course, my meditations were simply watching my body trying to digest the food that I had eaten. But I couldn't help myself. The fear was so strong that I had to go 18 hours without eating. It was a really deep struggle. Eventually, I began to notice the fear underneath that grasping, underneath that deep unpleasantness in my body. And eventually, I began to recognize that maybe I would make it. And that began to soften a little bit. Maybe you felt some of this discomfort during this retreat. The clenching, you know, the sense that something is wrong. How do we work with that when that arises? So shifting from the narrative to the experience can sometimes be really challenging. I was once working with a couple. They had a really gnarly issue going on. And so I turned to the woman and I said, So what do you feel right now? And she said, what do I feel? I feel he's an idiot. So I tried to explain about thoughts versus feelings and how thoughts and feelings are biophysical events. They exist in the mind, they exist in the body. And what we weren't looking for a thought, we were kind of looking for sort of how it lived inside. And she listened and she said, no, I really feel he's an idiot. She was so identified with her mind and with that emotion. And of course, what I was looking for was where that lived inside. And eventually she began to describe what it felt like. And for her, she felt a tightness. She felt a constriction in her chest. She felt an acid feeling in her gut. She felt a tightening in her jaw. And she described that as anger and frustration. So I invited her to kind of check back in. Did all that whole combination of sensations, did the word anger and frustration, did that match what she was feeling? And it was a long pause. And she said, no, it's actually disappointment and hurt. That shift, the shifting from the experience in the mind to the experience in the body, was quite profound for her. Something changed in her, and quite dramatically, something changed in her partner. Suddenly he softened, and suddenly he started caring. And the whole session shifted right there. So that was in partnership with another person. When we're doing this work internally, we're in an internal partnership as we experience what's between us and feeling free. When you can name what's happening, when you can really recognize what's going on and give it a name and have it corroborate with what it feels like inside, oftentimes compassion will arise. Not all the time. Sometimes we need to jumpstart the compassion, but that's okay. So just to close your eyes for a moment. When you check in with the felt sense right now, can you name what it feels like? Can you locate where it feels the most predominant? And is it possible, with whatever you're experiencing right now, to offer a quality of kindness, some quality of loving presence? And as you do so, how does it shift? How does it move? How does it change? And if you like, you can let the eyes open or remain with them closed. So this is a big part of our journey, recognizing what's here, allowing, bringing a sense of kindness. It's wherever you are, just the sense, for example, disappointment and anger feel like this. We shift our attention from the story to the experience. We bring compassion as best as we can in that moment. We sense how it wants us to be with it, what kind of attention it wants right now. And so this experience on retreat is a visitation of energies, a visitation of memories that are constantly changing, constantly taking different forms, both memories, projections into the future. It's not a problem. It's simply what happens. The difference is how we hold it inside. And so we do our best to meet the moment in the body, to understand that everything that exists in the mind also exists in the body, that this is a psychobiological event, that we can use awareness of the body to calm the mind, that we can use the body to come into a greater sense of presence. But then the question is, how does the body lead to liberation? Someone once came to me before a week-long retreat, and she knew that she had a lot of trauma in her history. And she was concerned about it coming up. Sometimes memories arise that feel like they're too much to handle. And just as everything undigested in your life will find its way to the surface, looking for a sense of wholeness, looking to be met by compassion and kindness, sometimes those memories can feel very, very intense. And I suggested an image which I find very helpful. Sometimes when something arises, we can imagine it like a wild animal at the edge of the woods. We can't chase after it, we can't lure it in, but we can let it know we see it. And we can sort of ask if it's okay to be with it. And sometimes it's not. Sometimes what arises just feels like it's too much. Either it feels too strong, or you may feel that you don't have the energy to meet it. And that's okay. It can be very skillful to shift your attention in some strategic way, to shift your technique, to maybe stand, to go for a walk, to have a cup of tea. And she reported later on the retreat that was very helpful for her. That there are a number of times when she felt this gripping discomfort arise. And she found that sometimes she was able to simply let it know that she saw it. And sometimes she could ask, "Can I be with you just for a little bit?" And she got just a kinesthetic sense that was possible. For her, it was about finding refuge, finding a way that she could be with it. And for her, it was primarily the refuge of Sangha, that she would just feel the goodness and this sense of shared intention in the group. And she would draw on that as a way to be with that feeling inside. And that allowed her to be with it as it began to shift and change a little bit. She also noticed that when she felt like she had lots of energy and felt vibrant and clear, that when that memory would arise, it really wasn't a problem. And she noticed that when she was tired or depleted or kind of caught in doubt or some kind of self-criticism, it felt like it was too much. Have you ever had a dream where you found yourself frozen in fear or running away from something that you felt was just about to catch you or fighting or flailing in some particular way? Those are the classic reactions to trauma, a sense of both fear and helplessness. And they're a natural part of what arises when we slow down and pay attention with the intention to come fully awake and fully whole. And so if you find in this arising of felt sense, when it feels like it's too much, to let it know you see it. Can strategically shift your attention, or simply to sense, can I be with this? It can be helpful in using the body to reflect on the three characteristics of reality. In many ways, I have found this very helpful in sort of deconstructing that which feels like it's too much, or when I feel really lost. When you soften into this deepening practice of moment-to-moment attention, the Buddha said that you may notice these three characteristics of reality pervading every experience. And rather than go into a long explanation of each one, I found a poem that might help to represent them. The first is recognizing impermanence, recognizing that everything changes. This is a wonderful teaching that says there are four words that will make a happy person sad and a sad person happy. Those four words, this too shall pass. The moments of exaltation, the moments of expansiveness that we hope and pray are permanent, when we recognize that these are temporal states, there can be an incredible letdown. In the same way, when you find yourself tight or bound or clenching and can bring yourself into an ever-deepening inquiry to be intimate with it, to remember that this too shall pass, can create a wonderful refuge, can create a little more space to be with or to bear that experience. Here's the poem. We were riding through frozen fields in a wagon at dawn. A red wing rose in the darkness. And suddenly a hare ran across the road. One of us pointed to it with his hand. That was long ago. Today, neither of them is alive. Not the hare, nor the man who made the gesture. Oh, my love, where are they? Where are they going? The flash of a hand, the streak of movement, the rustle of pebbles. I ask not of sorrow, but in wonder. There is this wonder that can arise when we realize the truth of how every moment is changing. Everything is in a constant state of shifting and moving. The second characteristic is has to do with the stress and the suffering that arise out of your relationship to what is changing. When something is changing and you don't want it to, there'll be a quality of stress or suffering. Something isn't changing and you want it to, again, some manifestation of stress or suffering. When we bring our attention to that quality of stress or suffering, we can oftentimes see the gripping fear around survival. Or you might sense how it's tied into some need for attention or affection or love, or some fear of losing control. And as someone once said, offered these instructions, relax, absolutely nothing is under control. So this poem from Annie Dillard from Pilgrim Creek talks about speaking how to live in relationship to that quality of impermanence. I would like to learn, or rather remember, how to live to open to time and death painlessly, noticing everything, remembering nothing, choosing the given with fierce and pointed will, yielding at every moment to the perfect freedom of what is. Is it possible to yield at every moment to the perfect freedom of what is? The third characteristic of reality has to do with the self, or rather, not self. That who you are in this relationship of what is changing and your relationship to it. That there's something here of recognizing that who and what you are is a product of causes and conditions. This is a topic that is incredibly rich, but perhaps it's best described in this haiku. And I'll read it twice, and you might like to just close your eyes and sort of sense it inside. We sit together, the mountain and me, until only the mountain remains. We sit together, the mountain and me, until only the mountain remains. So looking through the lens of the three characteristics as we contemplate the body, why is this important? We're here to look at what's real. You're here to experience what's between you and feeling free. And in this inquiry, which can oftentimes lead to all kinds of non-ordinary states, what can you count on as a bedrock of this life experience? What is unshakable that we can rely on? We recognize that everything changes. We recognize that it's our relationship to what is changing that determines the level of stress and suffering that we'll experience. And we recognize that who we are as the observer of all this is also subject to change. We all know from our own experience that when a sense of I and mine falls away, something mysterious and wondrous emerges. Oftentimes this practice is called insight meditation. Where does insight arise? It's when we've suspended the identification of the mind and fully rested ourselves in the here and now. We can't make insights happen. We can't make intuition happen. All we can do is create the optimal environment for it to happen. To rest in the body, to suspend the judging, grasping mind and the need to figure it out. That's the alchemy of this core teaching. So I thought we might close with a short meditation, just a reflection on the senses, on the body. If you like, you can close your eyes. You might escort your attention into the experience of here and now. There is a particular form of meditation sometimes called bare attention. It's a sense of being present without a past or a future. A training of the mind to the aliveness of this vibrant and unpredictable now. And you might let your attention open to the sounds around you. And as you feel the aliveness, the vibrancy of the senses, and notice if you can experience the sound as vibration. Can you sense this quality of impermanence? The delicacy of the sound vibrations. Can you sense the delicacy of your relationship to these sounds? To allow them to be as they are without rejecting or holding on. You might gently inquire, who is it that listens? Who is the listener? Very gently, if you wish, you might deepen the breath. If you wish, allowing the eyes to open. However you use this body, whether it be a willful practice of keeping your attention in the here and now, a practice of relaxing into the senses, or escorting or guiding your attention back again and again. And this is the foundation of our practice. it can be a great leap of faith to surrender your problem-solving mind to just being present, to surrender everything into the experience of here and now. Thank you for your kind attention. It is a beautiful night outside. You might like to let your body take you for a walk and just enjoy the air and the sounds and the aliveness that's out there.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.